Hello.
Oh, hey, Dorothy. Hey, it's Susan. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. Let's see. I was just trying to get up. I was on a call with a colleague, and we were mid discussion. I was like, I have to go.
No worries.
Thanks for making time for this in your schedule.
Yeah, of course.
Delighted to talk to you. We were talking about ways to do something that's really relevant to the COVID situation now that would be useful to science museums and also
yeah.
some of our programs. And Amanda came up with, she's like, do you know about Dorothy Tovar? And I was like, no, tell me. So we were very excited about your bat cell research.
Oh, thank you.
I hope those questions sort of got at what you want to talk about. I always like to ask people about things that they really like to talk about. So
yeah,
I imagine you've got probably a lot going on with the if-then thing is so cool. Were you just how did you get nominated for that? I'm curious.
Yeah, it's amazing. So it was actually just a application process. And I have an aunt who sent me the link to, I think one of the tweets where they were like advertising applications, and I just applied and was like, this is completely out of my league. Like, there's no way I'm gonna get this. and then I got it, and it's been so amazing. Like, most scientists don't have this kind of platform, so it's been really, really humbling and such a blessing to be able to have this platform to talk to young girls and kind of give them a role model and be able to see themselves in someone who's doing science.
Yeah, and what have you done so far with If Then? I know you guys
yes.
have a kickoff event, right? And then what happens after that?
Yeah, so we had our kickoff event, and at the kickoff event, they did these 3D scans of us that are going to be used to 3D print statues. And one of the like follow-up events, that kind of the biggest follow-up event after our kickoff, was supposed to be the unveiling of the exhibit of our statues in Dallas. And it's going to be the largest collection of statues of women in the world. All like 125 ambassadors have their own statue, and each of them have like a little plaque with a blurb about like who we are and what we do. So I think that's getting postponed, obviously, with what's happening right now. But I've also been able to talk at the Teen Vogue Summit in LA. I guess not really talk, but I attended on behalf of If Then with a couple of other ambassadors, and we were able to talk to some girls there. And I've also been on a Reddit panel also about the COVID-19 outbreak. This was back in February before the impact of it was so huge here in the States. And then last week I did a YouTube live video Q&A for kids about COVID-19, which was really, really cool.
Oh, wow. Wait,
yeah.
I've seen that one. Somebody mentioned that you had something on YouTube. I need to watch that.
Yeah, it was lots of fun. It was kind of awkward at first because, you know, you can't like really see the people you're interacting with. But it was really cool.
Yeah. You know, I should put that in the interview actually. Here, let me put the, let me see if I can find the URL.
Mm-hmm.
What was it called?
I think it was called Dorothy Tovar, Bat Virologist Answers Kids' Questions About...
Oh, yeah, Goldie Blocks. That's right.
Yeah.
Okay, mm-hmm. Very cool. All right, I'll add this in there. That is great. Okay. Okay, so what I will do is I'll just launch into the... what I do first is I just read your little bio,
okay,
and introduce you, and then I ask you the questions, and then you can answer. Let's see, we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So usually the whole interview lasts like, you know, maybe 10 minutes at the most, and feel free to talk as much or as little as you want. And
okay,
I'll do a short version for the blog and then link to the complete transcript. And I'll send you a copy of it afterwards just to make sure that I got all the spellings correct and things like
yeah.
that.
Yeah, of course.
Okay. Let me just double check that we're recording. Yes, mm-hmm. You're recording. Okay, that's good. All right. This is Susan Strait, editor of Dimensions Magazine, and I'm here today with Dorothy Tovar, a PhD candidate in the Department of Microbiology and Immunology at Stanford University. Dorothy studies bat cells to determine how bats can host and spread viral diseases that are deadly to humans without getting sick themselves. She hopes to understand bats' immune responses and heighten awareness of the evolutionary drivers that lead bat-borne diseases to infect people. Tovar received the University of Massachusetts' 21st Century Leader Award and Academic Fellowship Awards from the National Science Foundation and the American Society for Microbiology. She's an if-then ambassador, serving as a role model to encourage girls to pursue science careers. Dorothy, your research is overlapping a singular moment in global history, the coronavirus pandemic. From a microbiologist's perspective, can you share your thoughts on COVID-19 and how it relates to your work?
Yeah, Susan, thanks so much for having me. I would say that many virologists and infectious disease epidemiologists before me have predicted the coming of an outbreak like this. And when I was a senior in college, actually, and applying to grad school, I read this book called Spillover by David Quammen. And I was really captivated by the reality of the next big one, referring to like the next big viral outbreak that would come into people. And in this book, Donald Burke, an infectious disease epidemiologist, was quoted saying that some of these viruses should be considered as serious threats to human health. And I took that really seriously and kind of felt called to start studying this. And so when I decided to become a grad student at Stanford, reading this really influenced both why and how I wanted to study viruses in bats. And I decided to work with both a virologist and an evolutionary biologist to understand interactions between bats and their viruses. And I think the way that this relates to the COVID outbreak is that regardless of whether or not this virus has a bat reservoir, we do know that it came from some animal host. And in order for us to be able to combat this virus and be prepared for future outbreaks, it's really important for us to understand the biology of these viruses and the ecology and evolution of their hosts. So I'm really humbled to just be like jumping into this field at a time when there are so many really great strides being made on this end.
So true. What's something you wish you were seeing or hearing more in the media about the epidemic?
Yeah, I've heard a lot about this outbreak being referred to as the great equalizer, and I don't think that it is. And while a virus doesn't discriminate on socioeconomic status, I think the outcomes of infection can vary drastically based on these factors. And for some of us, this outbreak has been a quite grueling exercise of working from home, which turns out to be quite difficult. But for a lot of other nameless and invisible communities, this outbreak is really wreaking havoc on health and livelihoods. And so I'm really privileged to weather this outbreak from my apartment at Stanford. But I also try to work really hard to remember that that's not the case for most other people. And I would really love to see more media coverage on ways that privileged people like myself can help. And if that's really just like staying at home, then I want more media coverage emphasizing like how important the decision to stay home and self-isolate really is for others who are more vulnerable.
Yeah. Many people have a pretty strong aversion to bats, whether it's from watching too many horror movies, having had a close encounter with one at night, or from knowing that they carry deadly diseases. So how did you feel about bats before you started studying them, and how has your research changed your perception of bats, if at all?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think a lot of the aversion, at least that I had, was due to a lack of knowledge and some inaccurate media portrayals. And I didn't really think about bats very much before starting to study them, mostly because I didn't really realize how ubiquitous they were. We had bats in our backyard when we moved to the suburbs, and I used to really be worried about them getting into our attic. I think that was mostly because of my virus-oriented mind kind of immediately going to like, okay, bats have rabies, and that's all I know about bats. But now I am co-advised in the ecology lab and was trained by a grad student who absolutely loves bats. And she taught me about how important bats are to our ecosystems and was even able to convince me that some of them are cute. so I've definitely drank the Kool-Aid and think they're really magnificent animals. And as with most things in nature, it's hard not to have a deep respect for creatures that you've just learned so much about.
Yeah. What do you wish you'd known before you started researching these immune responses in bats and the viruses they spread?
Yeah, that's a really good one. I think what I wish I'd known was how big of a question this is. I think when I started, it seemed super small. And now that I'm nearing the end of my PhD, I'm definitely realizing that I'm definitely not going to answer it over the course of my graduate career. And while we're all driven by our individual curiosities and passion, it's really the field as a whole that makes important strides. So now I'm really just content if my thesis work is even a small drop in that bucket.
Yeah, what's the most hopeful thing you've discovered in your research so far?
I would say the most hopeful thing that's come out of this is actually not something that I study directly, but in following the work of amazing disease ecologists like Raina Plowright, we're learning a lot about the ecological drivers of zoonotic spillover. And some of these drivers might actually be linked to human behavior like deforestation. And my hope, and I think what I find the most hopeful about this fact, is that a positive outcome from outbreaks like this might be more investment in conservation solutions that protect bats and work to decrease the incidence of viral spillover into people.
So how can science museums promote the work of microbiologists such as you through their online programming right now?
Yeah, that's a great question. Researchers have been working on stuff like this for decades, right? And really profound advancements have been made. I think highlighting their work and why it's important to the world we live in really helps. And it's kind of hard with microbes because they're invisible and the average person doesn't spend a lot of time thinking about things we can't see. So I think the general public would really benefit from resources that connect this invisible world to tangible things that they see and experience every day.
Dorothy, thank you so much for talking with us today. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, of course. Thank you for having me.